Welcome to the Classic Rock Show on Huntley Community Radio, the mighty 101.5 FM, and I am Jim Samaria.
And I'm your humble co-host, Mark Plotnick. Each week, Jim and I bring you music, personal insights, and interviews spanning the most prolific and diverse era for rock and roll music.
That is so true, Mark. That's what we do. Mark and I are the authors of the book Classic Rock, Photographs from Yesterday and Today, which is available on Amazon and at the Music Gallery in Highland Park. The book features my photography of classic rock artists from 1973 to present day with words by that rock and roll guru, Mr. Mark Plotnick.
Well, Jim, we lost another icon last month. Music icon, that is. Keith Richards called him the Key, while Mick Jagger's referred to him as the Wembley Whammer because he grew up in Wembley. He was one of the greatest drummers of his generation, and I'm sure everyone knows who we're talking about.
Well, we're talking about Charlie Watts, and it's only appropriate that we use today's show to celebrate him, his life, and his music. But the challenge is, Mark, is how do we put together a Charlie Watts playlist from six decades and dozens of albums to choose from?
I know. It's a tough assignment for a one-hour show. So to meet this challenge, we've applied some statistical analysis. We're getting scientific here.
We're very scientific. You're so clever. Mark and I researched 10 online music publications that listed their top Charlie Watts songs with the Stones. We took the top vote-getters and then added music Charlie played with other bands as well.
And between songs, you'll get to know a little more about Charlie Watts the person. So, Jim, here's a drum roll to kick off today's show. Wow, that was a long drum roll.
Was that really Charlie Watts?
I hope he was better than that.
Okay. That was Jim Eggers on drums, ladies and gentlemen. Let's hear it for Jim
Eggers. Yay. All right.
Let's start off, Mark.
All right. Well, why don't you start us off with a little history about the young Charlie Watts before he became a Rolling Stone?
Well, Charlie was born in London, England on June 2nd, 1941. And his interest in percussion began at age 12 when he kept time to a jazz recording with a rolled-up newspaper. After his father bought him a banjo, he ripped off the neck and used the drum head as a percussion instrument. Very ingenious. And by age 14, his parents felt, well, he's getting really good on that banjo, so let's get him some real drums.
Destructive little bloke.
Yeah.
Wasn't he?
Yeah.
Charlie's youthful immersion into jazz began with Dave Green, his next-door neighbor who would become his lifelong friend. He also played bass. They listened and jammed to guys like Duke Ellington, Jerry Mulligan, Charlie Parker, and a lot of other jazz guys. In 1959, he attended art school and started hanging out with the jazz crowd in London's Soho District. Eventually, he landed a graphic design job with an ad agency.
Oh, I did not know that.
He was very talented.
He was. And in his spare time, he played in a jazz quartet and was discovered by guitarist and bandleader Alexis Korner, who we've played before on our blues show.
Yes, we have.
Korner has been called the father of British blues. And in 1961, Korner asked Charlie to join his band, Blues Incorporated, even though Watts lacked the interest in the music that they played, which was blues. In fact, the only rock and roll person Watts really cared for at the time was Fats Domino, who we also just played last week.
Yeah, and it was one other popular musician that he liked, and you'll be happy about this. He loved Frank Sinatra.
But who didn't?
Okay, well, then he's not so special. All right. Well, it was Brian Jones, Keith Richards, Mick Jagger, and Ian Stewart, the Stones piano player, who also admired Charlie's playing, and they were desperate to have him in their band. Unfortunately, Charlie preferred the security of a graphic design career, and he felt the Stones wouldn't last beyond a few months.
He was wrong.
He was wrong.
Yeah, a little off.
But through negotiation, his future bandmates persuaded him to join, and on January 12, 1963, Watts made his official debut as a member of the Rolling Stones.
Well, with that said, we're going to begin the show with two early Stones songs, two of my favorite. Released in 1965, Get Off My Cloud was the Stones' second number one song in the U.S., and Charlie's drum beat launches the song well before Jagger turns it into middle finger type sentiment. And then in 1966, the Stones released Paint It Black that showcased Brian Jones' growing interest in Eastern rhythms. Charlie Watts met the challenge head on, and in both cases, he made something complex sound so simple.
I'm black, with flowers and my love hope never to come back. I see people turn their heads and quickly look away, like a newborn baby, it just happens every day. I look inside myself and see my heart is black. I see my red door, I must have it painted black. Maybe then I'll fade away and I'll have to face the facts. It's not easy facing up when your whole world is black. No more will my green seagull turn a deeper blue. I could not foresee this thing happening to you. If I look hard enough into the setting sun, my love will laugh with me before the morning comes. I see a red door and I want it painted black. No colors anymore, I want them to turn black. Dressed in their summer clothes, I have to turn my head until my darkness goes.
Way to go, Charlie. Great, great song. Oh, by the way, everybody, you are listening to that classic rock show on WHRULP, Huntley Community Radio, 101.5 FM, and on demand 24/7.
Thank you. Well, let's talk a little bit about Charlie Watts' drumming style. You know, unlike his more flamboyant peers, Ginger Baker, Keith Moon, and John Bonham, Charlie used a basic four-piece kit. And he was known for his impeccable groove and inventive fills, and he gave the Stones swing and bounce to the music. He also made their music quite danceable.
Yes, and he, without getting too technical, he had the mindset of a jazz man who stayed in the pocket and played slightly behind the backbeat so that other band members could do their own thing. Bill Wyman explained that Charlie's drumming would be a fraction of a second behind Keith Richards' guitar, and that made the Stones a hard band to imitate.
You know, I had a laugh. I read this interview with drummer Stuart Copeland of the Police. And he said that most rock drummers sound like they're chopping wood or trying to kill something. But he explained that Charlie had this technique that combined both propulsion and relaxation, and this made his style very difficult to copy.
Yeah, and I've read that Keith Richards would occasionally mess with Charlie by changing a song's beat, only to have Charlie pull it back. He was the band's unflappable anchor.
Yep. So let's get to our next two Stone songs. Gimme Shelter appeared on the 1969 album Let It Bleed. This song incorporated everything that's great about the Rolling Stones. It's also a masterclass in drumming. Charlie's drum drops punctuate the song's dangerous mood, along with one of the greatest backing vocals ever, courtesy of Mary Clayton.
Yeah, and the Mary Clayton story is pretty cool. I'm going to say it really, really quick.
Go ahead.
It was like 1 or 2 in the morning. She was in bed with curlers in her hair and the whole thing, and she gets a call saying, we need a female vocalist. Can you come down to the studio? And she came down to the studio, did her part, and left.
Yeah, and she was pregnant at the time.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
She even asked her husband, who are these guys?
Yeah, she didn't know. And when she read
the words,
she said, I'm not going to sing that. And they said, you're going to sing it because you're getting paid. And after Gimme Shelter, we're going to follow that up with the live version of Honky Tonk Women. It's off the fabulous 1969 album Get Your Yayas Out, which is my favorite live album of all time.
Mine too.
Yeah. The album introduces new guitarist Mick Taylor to an enthusiastic Madison Square Garden audience. But this particular song is about Charlie. Listen to Mick Jagger's opening remarks. I'm going to try and do my best, Mick Jagger. Charlie's good tonight, isn't he?
that was
good, huh?
I like that.
I practiced all night.
Wow.
Take me upstairs for a ride. Hey.
Okay, well, I guess Charlie was good tonight, wasn't he?
I think he was very good. Yeah. Hey, I got a quick story, Mark, about Gimme Shelter. Several years ago, maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, I got to photograph Fergie, which was very exciting. It was like it was also part of a meet and greet, so I had time to talk to her. So I just asked her, was she nervous doing Gimme Shelter with the Stones at the 25th anniversary of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? She said, no, I knew all the words. It's a song I grew up with. My dad made me listen to all those songs growing up. So I knew every word. I was excited. And it was one of the highlights of my career. I said, yeah, I think if I sung with Mick Jagger, it would be a highlight of my career, too. But she just was so thrilled that she got to do that.
She was so inspired. It gave me goosebumps when I was watching it.
Yeah, good. She was a good person, too.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about Charlie Watts, the man.
Okay,
well.
As opposed to what, the woman?
The person.
Oh, the person, okay.
He was quiet. He was very polite. He was very self-deprecating. He was well known for his impeccable wardrobe. He loved what were called Savile Row suits, or Savile Row, I don't know how to pronounce it. But that's an area of London where all these fine tailors and men's clothing stores are. And he was very indifferent to rock stardom and all of its trappings. He hated interviews and publicity and all that kind of thing. He also lived for years on a 16th century farm with 150 Arabian horses and rescued greyhounds. My understanding is he had one of the biggest Arabian horse stud farms in the world. And he was married to the same woman from 1964 until his passing. He had one daughter and he had a granddaughter.
Yeah, Charlie was eccentric for sure. He once told a reporter that he should have been born in 1810, living like a Victorian landowner. His routine was to get up, decide what to wear, have breakfast, and then stroll around his manor. It's been widely reported that in hotel rooms on tour, he passed the time sketching nearly every hotel bed he slept in since 1967. On tour, he also handled all of his clothes in an orderly manner, unfolding, folding, and putting them away before going out.
You know, he was also a collector and a hoarder. He would have been great on one of these shows now, you know, the hoarding shows.
Yeah, but I like to see what he hoarded.
Yeah.
More so than...
he collected a lot of valuable things. He loved cricket. He loved collecting cars, but he didn't drive. He also loved reading books on 1940s Hollywood. He loved the solitude with his jazz records. But he wasn't always quiet, and I read this in a New York Times article after he passed away. He once punched out Mick Jagger while they were on tour, and Mick had a few drinks. Mick called up his room and said sarcastically, "Is my drummer there?"
And Mark, do you know the rest of that story, though?
I don't, but you're going to tell me.
I'm going to tell you. Well, after the punch, Charlie Watts yelled at Mick, "Hey, I'm not your drummer, you're my singer."
Yeah, and you know, I heard that he hit him so hard that he slid across a table and he almost fell out the window of the hotel room. That is true.
That would not have been good.
No, that wouldn't have been good.
So you got more trivia on Mr. Watts?
Yeah, well, let's talk about Charlie Watts and his views of the band he played with for 57 years. They're kind of interesting. He said the Stones were never that sociable as a group. When they were not touring, they would go months without speaking to each other. The one exception is Ron Wood, he said, was very sociable. Ron Wood would talk to anybody. He also said the Rolling Stones was more than the band. It was basically your whole life when the band is recording or touring. He said the band was really most comfortable when they were playing blues songs like Jimmy Reed and Chuck Berry stuff. He did believe that Mick Jagger was probably the best performer in the world. He said he had a better sense of proportion than Michael Jackson, who he felt was Jagger's only rival. And although it's said that Keith Richards has pointed out that Charlie was one of the three pillars of the Rolling Stones, Watts disagrees. He does acknowledge that he and Keith did work really well together, and they could just look at each other with a nod or a wink, and they would know actually how to follow each other and play.
Well, and although Watts says his bandmates were friends and enjoyed being in the band, he saw it more as a job. The world of rock and roll was kind of rubbish to him. It was easy for him to go home, enjoy his hobbies, and be with his wife, who he loved so dearly. Speaking of the Stones again, when Bill Wyman left the band, Watts said he barely noticed his absence on stage when he was replaced by Darryl Jones, who, by the way, is from Chicago.
That's right.
No disrespect to Bill, but Jones gave the band a subtle lift because of his excellent taste. Before they hired Jones, Watts said they auditioned three bass players every day. Each was given three Stone songs to perform, and Keith Richards chose the one that had the fit with Charlie, and that was how the final decision was made. They were also choosing personality so that you hope you're making the right choice.
You've been listening to part one of that classic rock show on WHRULP, Huntley Community Radio, the mighty 101.5 FM, and available on demand 24/7.